Get the best quality paints from Dutch Boy for all your projects at Menards. MaxBond Plus exterior paint and primer in one is designed to stand strong against extreme weather. It provides max adhesion, hide, and performance, and repels rain in just 90 minutes after application. And with Dutch Boy's high-performing paints that last, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards today and get your paint project started. Save big money
at Menards. You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 122 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by two people this evening. I'm joined by Kieran and Lauren Jewell. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing? You okay?
Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. We are here to talk about your son, who has Hirschsprungs. And I guess I'll start with you first, Lauren. Would you like to take us through sort of the first moments, I guess?
Yeah, so I had a horrible labor, but we won't go into that one.
You can if you want, people have done before.
I don't think anyone wants to be bored by the horrible labor. When he was first born, he was breastfed, so he had a really, really long feed to start with, and I think even me and the nurses were all like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Like, breastfed really well. And it all seemed to be going really smoothly. And then I had hit, so I think I had him, what time was it? 2:40? I never remember. I was almost drugs at that point. And it got to about 8 o'clock in the evening. And one of the nurses was like, has he fed anymore? And I was just like, no, he hasn't really asked for it. He hasn't cried or anything. So I haven't really offered it to him. And she was like, okay, maybe try. And he just did not want it, was just not interested. So she was like, okay, we'll come around in again in like an hour or so, try again. So I think it was like a couple of hours later in the end, came around, just wasn't interested at all. So she was like, okay, let's try and like syringe some milk into him, try it that way, just to see if he then takes that. And they managed to get some in and he threw it up straight away. And it was like a greeny coloured sick. And I remember saying then to the midwife, I was like, is this normal? I know babies are sick, but green, like, is green normal? And she was like, yeah, sometimes they swallow things when they come out. It's just one of those things. They were like, we'll keep an eye on it, but it's probably nothing. So the next day he had like all his newborn checks, and they all were absolutely fine. He still hadn't really fed during the night. And every time he did have like anything syringed in, just threw it back up again. He did pass meconium, didn't he? I think probably about three times he passed. So we were like, no one obviously thought anything of it. But he just still was refusing milk. Didn't want it. Didn't want it out of a bottle. Didn't want it from me. Didn't want it from a syringe. And any time the like nurses basically force fed it into him, he just, yeah, threw it back up. So I think it got to the, 2 days?
7 day.
Yeah, it was, yeah, the second day. And one of the nurses came around to do the check on him. And they were like, was it his heart rate?
Breathing rate.
Oh, his breathing rate wasn't right. So she was like, we're just going to take him off to do some checks and stuff. Took him off to do then and basically came back with, we're going to take him to NICU because he has, what did they say to start with? They thought it was...
They suspected twisted bowel, wasn't it?
When they put him under the light, I can't remember.
Oh, jaundice.
Jaundice. They put it down to that to start with. Yeah. So they just said it was that. So they put him under the light, they kept an eye on him, but then they were really concerned because his stomach was really hard and really big. So we then got woken up on the third day, early hours of the morning, and the doctor was like, we're going to rush him over to the hospital. We think he either has sepsis or a twisted bowel. So he, yeah, needs to have this emergency operation. So he went over, had that, obviously came back that it was absolutely fine. His bowel, from what I saw, looked absolutely fine. They did open surgery and they were like, they gave it all like a flush through, said everything was fine. So they were like, the only other thing we can put it down to is Hirschsprung's disease, which we were just like, what on earth is that? Never probably. So because he obviously then had such a major surgery, he was in intensive care for 2 weeks. And we were then shown, while they were waiting for the biopsies to come back, we were shown how to do washouts. But he was still passing poo as well at the same time. So they were actually having bets in intensive care, weren't they? The nurses.
I don't think they weren't exchanging money or anything like that. Like, once Bishop, there was
a boogie gambling ring going on.
Yeah. They were having bets about whether or not he had Hirschsprung's disease or how bad it was, because they were like, he's pooing normally. Like, he was then back feeding again when we were doing the washouts. He was then feeding and everything. So they were just like, I think one of the nurses just turned around and were like, I think she's just like, it's really weird. If this is Hirschsprung's disease, it's obviously a really mild case of it, basically. So 2 weeks later, it came back from the biopsies that it was Hirschsprung's disease. So we carried on with the bowel washouts. So we were doing them daily. And he seemed to be doing really well, didn't he? He was still passing, so he'd still pass throughout the day, poo without us doing washouts. He was still passing poo. Just seemed to be doing really well. He then had his big operation in the December.
It was December 23.
Yeah, and they thought that was going to be really straightforward because obviously he seemed quite straightforward. They thought they were going to be able to remove the small bit of bowel that they thought probably had it, and that was going to be it. And it was the longest day, as they always are, and it got to, I think it was probably about 5:30 in the evening, wasn't it?
Yeah, it went in about 8:30, something like that.
Yeah, and the surgeon came around and she was like, he's got a stoma. And we were just like, oh, okay. Because they'd always said to us, a stoma can happen, but it's rare, obviously, because of how he's coping. He probably won't come out with one. So we were then like, oh, okay. Like, that was a big shock. They were like, he's obviously got it worse than we first thought, so it's obviously a lot higher up. So they're like, we've given him a stoma and we'll just have to monitor how he goes. And then we had bouts then from then of just illness, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I think it was the 2024, it was April, May, July, we were admitted like 3 times within those months to, like, I think he had like stomach bugs or just viruses that just really badly affected his bowels. So they ended up pushing back the big operation because they were like, he needs to be well. He needs to be well enough and he needs to be gaining weight before we can even think about doing the big operation. So they waited until June of last year. And he actually had the whole of his large bowel removed and 16 centimetres of his stoma. And he's had his ileostomy moved, like, obviously higher up into the small bowel. So, wow.
Because what fascinates me just first about that story is that they suspected possible Hirschsprung's. And then am I right in saying that ended up being total colonic.
Yeah. So they were, because of he was pooing, the washouts were all going really well. And they basically said everything we were doing and everything that he was doing himself was a sign that maybe he doesn't even have Hirschsprung's. They were kind of like, it could be, but without the biopsy results, it might not be. So, you know, who knows at the moment? And that's why they were like so unsure, making kind of, they had a bit of a laugh of us, they could tell people were quite stressed at that situation. And they were like, oh, some of us think it is, some of us don't think it is, that kind of stuff. And then when it came back, it was, we were like, everyone was like shocked. Even the guys that were saying, oh, yeah, we think it's Hirschsprung's, they were shocked to find out it was also as high up in the barrel as it was. It didn't make any sense, which I think is probably a theme with Hirschsprung's. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, tell her about it. I'm 120 episodes in. I still have no idea.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
But yeah, I mean, because obviously the meconium was passed and was still pooing.
Yeah.
I was convinced by your story that it was going to be something like ultra short segment or short segment or something where it's, I don't want to say not as serious, but not as effective.
Not immediate, yeah.
But it's, yeah, I think that's
correct. I do think still even to this day, like our surgeon and all of our surgical team is still like, it's baffling because he was pooing by himself. Like he was doing so well with just the washouts. And you look back and you're like, well, we were doing the washouts fine once a day, but you just think, will we getting way up to the small bowel? Probably not. So it's, it's fascinating. But yes.
That's incredible. And when it comes to the operations, I know you said that it was a really long day, and I imagine it is. I've been lucky enough for my 10 surgeries to be asleep for all of them. So I don't know what it's like to be sort of waiting, but what do you kind of do in that time to pass by?
The first operation, we were just both an absolute wreck. So I think we went for like a half an hour walk, didn't we, on the first operation he ever had. And then we sat in the room just waiting the whole day. And it was the last operation he had. We were like, we need to do better because you end up going insane. Like you end up just sitting there being like, well, it's been so long now. Like, why is he not out? What's going on? And something happened. And obviously there's no communication when he's under either. So the last operation was longer. So he was actually under in June of last year. He was actually under from about 8:30 in the morning until, what was it? 7:30 in the evening.
Yeah.
It was a really, really long one last time. But we learned from the big operation he had, and we actually spent probably about half the day out. We went and had some lunch, a drink, and we were like, do you know what? He's in good hands.
It was a soft drink on the power pipe.
He didn't appeal of his stumble back.
Did feel like a last glass of wine, but knowing I was going to be in the hospital for probably about a week, 2 weeks afterwards, I was like, I probably shouldn't. But they are such long days.
Yeah, I can imagine. I just can't think what you do, because I mean you get to, I guess you can't take your mind off it, but you try to, if that makes sense. I don't know.
We're really lucky. Like we live about 10-minute drive from Southampton General Hospital, so we like a lot of people don't have that luxury of being able to come home. Like obviously people stay in the Ronald McDonald houses and stuff like that. We're really lucky that we live down the road, but even still we were like, yeah, we're not gonna go home, we'll just stay around the hospital. And I mean it's really morbid at Southampton Hospital. There's a cemetery directly outside, and yeah, I know, you drive past it on the way to the car park, and
we've spent many a time,
and it's where my great-grandparents are in there. So I used to visit there quite a lot with my grandparents. So we at one point we were like, oh, we'll find their grave and put that kind of stuff. And then we were like, oh, that's cool. 10 minutes. Like, now what do we do? We walk to the park and it's, right, I still have 10 minutes. Right, what should we do now? So, yeah, we just spend a lot of money in Costa, to be honest.
Yeah, well, good for their business, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really strange, though, because I was actually having this discussion with someone the other day, a parent, and I was saying that you just become desensitized to it, because I feel like he's had loads of like mini procedures while he's been under anaesthetic as well. And the first couple of operations, obviously the one as a baby and the one that he had in the December, we were just, yeah, awful when he first went under. But the last one that he had in June, even though I knew it was going to be a much bigger surgery, like, there was almost nothing. Like, obviously I was worried, but there was no tears there. And I think you almost, yeah, I think you just become desensitized to it because you're like, yeah, just get on with it.
But also, he obviously that much older. So if you're in the waiting room getting upset or nervous and stuff like that, you're kind of really going to stress him out as well, especially like last year when he would have been, well, nearly two.
Yeah.
I think if we would have been stressing out or not treating it like a normal day, he'd have started stressing out and it would have made him worse as well. So you kind of put on a bit of a brave face, and Lauren's definitely downplaying that. Like, we definitely, to say it was like, oh, you know, it was, once he'd gone in, there was definitely a little bit of but
not half as bad.
The difference as well, that was in June, so the weather's a bit nice to go for a walk. The last one, the one before that, was in December, so you're a little bit more limited. So if it makes any difference, the sun being out, going for a walk around the common in Southampton and stuff like that, and us forcing ourselves to leave the hospital in the immediate area, that was trial and error, but definitely learned that lesson.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point there. I think weather would make a huge difference, whether the operation's in the summer or whether it's in the winter. I think just that getting out, getting fresh air can be really helpful. So I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, like even for him when he was discharged, just being able to, because obviously they're cooped up, aren't they, in like the rooms or whatever for so long. So it was actually really nice in June of last year being able to just be like, right, we've been discharged. Let's just go home and actually get in the garden, like actually get some fresh air. Like, and I think that makes the world of difference, doesn't it, to recovery as well?
Huge. Yeah. Absolutely. You made a point there, Lauren, when you said that he came back with a stoma that you weren't kind of expecting.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of like warning, or did they say, oh, this may possibly happen or whatnot?
Yeah. So just before he went under, obviously they go through the whole procedure and everything. And they did say then, look, there is a possibility he could come out of the stoma. Obviously, it probably won't happen, but there is that possibility. But I think everyone was just so unaware of how bad it actually was.
Yeah. I guess I guess you have to sign forms and whatnot, and it says, oh, this may happen. They may have a stoma. They may do this and that and the other. But yeah, I guess when you're not quite expecting. Because I've spoken to mothers before when they aren't expecting their child to have a stoma,
yeah,
and then they appear with a stoma and you think, right, okay, now, as well as having to talk about, you know, Hirschsprungs and get to grips with Hirschsprungs, it's then also being a stoma parent, I guess, is the term. It brings along another set of, you know, things to learn, I guess.
Yeah,
we were really, it sounds really strange, but like before the surgery, because we were like, oh, it's going to be a small procedure, his pull through is going to be really successful, it's going to be, you know, he's going to be mostly intact, all that kind of stuff. And it was probably my fault. I like to kind of go, oh, this is the best case scenario, this is the worst case scenario, let's aim for somewhere in the middle, or best case, let's aim for that. And I think I remember saying to you, oh, worst case scenario, it's a stoma, which isn't the end of the world, but that's realistic, that's the worst case scenario. And then when he came out of a stoma, instantly went, oh, that's worst case scenario, oh no. And we kind of had that little moment where we kind of didn't know what to do. But the best thing that could have happened, especially obviously because I can't stay the whole time, so I'll leave at 8 o'clock, and you made friends with the woman, the lady across from you, whose son also is about the same age as Freddie, isn't he?
I think he's about 6 months old,
slightly older, and he had a stoma, and she noticed that you were a bit upset, yeah, nervous, stuff like that, and she straight away said, come over here, have a look. And
she like showed us the stoma that looked healthy, that had been there since he was like near enough.
He had a similar medical, but not Hirschsprung, like a similar bowel like problem. And the next day when I was back in, her and her husband did a bag change and just showed us everything. And they said, we'd say this all the time. They said to us, oh, you'll never want to lose that stoma. You'll love it. It looks scary now, but you'll be all over it. It's like, you'll be unbelievably good at stomas within like a month. So don't worry about it. And you're still in contact, aren't you, and stuff. And I think that parent instantly squashing that concern, like immediately squashing it, and checking on you and stuff like that, I think instantly alleviated any stress about it.
Because they do look scared, don't they? To start with, you're like, oh, wow, okay. Like, I'd never actually seen a stoma before. So to then see one on my four-month-old son, I was like, okay, like, what on earth do we do? And once it's obviously first been made, the whole area, like, bless him, his whole stomach just looked so sore. So obviously seeing it on our friend's little boy, it was actually really nice to be like, oh, okay, like, it actually isn't that scary. Like, that's been there for a very long time and it looks okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's so useful. I can't think of the amount of parents who would have loved that situation or that support or that help.
Yeah.
Straight away, because again, like you said, I mean, we talked a little bit off air about people, obviously, if you mentioned the word Hirschsprung's, 99% of people wouldn't have a clue. I think a lot of people wouldn't have a clue if you mentioned the word stoma as well.
Yeah.
And I think what is it, one in 200, which I think is quite a lot, people have a stoma. I think that's quite a lot, but I still think a lot of people wouldn't. And there's obviously loads of different types of stomas, the sort of like the really small aces, there's the ileostomy and whatnot. But I still think, you know, and even though if people know what a stoma is, stoma care, I'm guessing, is completely different to just seeing a stoma, I guess.
It's crazy because like we just assumed, oh, he's got a stoma. And obviously once the lady opposite us had gone for open bus and spoke to us, and the surgical team had been brilliant, and the stoma nurses in this area have been brilliant as well. We were like, oh, we've really got the hang of this. Like, we've really, like, in our own arrogance, we're unbelievable stomas. This is great. And then you have the new stoma put in following the surgery last year, and everything we knew about the previous stoma was a complete waste of time. And we're like, how can it be so different? Like, I understand the output being different, but just the behavior of a stoma is so strange, and it's just, it still blows our mind now. Like, we can't get our head around it, to be honest. But we're definitely on the right path, and Freddie's growing up with it, which he's used to it, so he doesn't think like a great deal of it now. But yeah, it's just so weird. I don't understand. Bowels are the strangest things. Like, I didn't know anything. Honestly, I thought a bowel and an intestine were different things until Freddie was born. Turns out they're not.
But again, like, why would you have to learn that?
Yeah.
You know, you don't, again, there's this always kind of, I have so much admiration for parents of children of any chronic illness, but especially Hirschsprung's, because you have to learn so much. You haven't got a choice. Yeah. You know, you have to, you're suddenly from, you know, matter of weeks and maybe even days previous, expecting, you know, normal birth, normal pregnancy, because that's the other thing with Hirschsprung's, again, most of the time there's a completely normal pregnancy, so you wouldn't notice, you know, if it doesn't tend to show up in there unless you have genetic testing, but again, that's hit and miss and whatnot. But to then having to go right from then to, now we have to learn all about Hirschsprung's, now we have to learn all about stomas, now we have to learn about pull-throughs. When, I know you mentioned that there were a couple of conditions, like twisted bowel, were mentioned previously to that, and then they mentioned Hirschsprung's. Sometimes they heard people say to parents, oh, don't Google it. Was that said to you?
I think.
And did you Google it?
Oh, me immediately.
They'll say, everyone does.
I Googled it immediately and then realized that I'd spelled it wrong and nothing underneath it even came close. And I don't know if that's a reflection of me or of how difficult the word is to spell.
Oh, it's the word.
I'll go with that. I'll go with definitely yeah. It's the word. But immediately we Googled it, and then we were, the real difficult thing was obviously where he was in intensive care, we were coming home. So it's down the road. We're really lucky that we're that fortunate it's down the road, but obviously still not very nice leaving little one in the hospital. And you come home and we pestered the nurses like with phone calls all night to see if he's all right. But we'd come home and then we'd be completely separated from the situation by being obviously in a different building. And all we're doing is just scrolling through our phones.
Searching
the Hirschsprung to Zillies. And the funny, and it's a joke I make to Lauren all the time, is I've never known Lauren to read academic journals, ever. If I'd suggested this to her 5 years ago, she'd have laughed in my face and told me to shut up.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's now reading journals from around the world. Yeah. I caught her on Google Scholar not so long ago, and I was like, what are you doing? That? It's completely blowing my mind that she's doing this kind of research. It's just really funny how it just changes everything. Like you find out this one thing and then you go on an absolute deep dive. And I think my Instagram algorithm for a long time was completely corrupted with Hirschsprung's disease.
But I have to admit, that is one thing that, especially for me, and I think you would feel the same, the social media side of things massively got me through. Like seeing the amazing stories that you see on Facebook, like I'm part of the Hirschsprung's pages, and seeing the really positive stories, and even like from your podcast, and seeing things on Instagram, and you see really like reassuring things, and you're like, okay, this is going to be okay. Everything is going to be fine. And so I really believe social media got us through massively, because the questions that I've asked on there before,
yeah,
because it is so rare, isn't it?
It's rare that social media is productive, but yeah. It's not still it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's had one bout of
enterocolitis,
and I think you always get like mum instinct. Like I said to you straight away, didn't I? I was like, this doesn't feel right. I feel like we need to go to hospital. And you were like, no, let's just give it until tomorrow and see how it goes. So basically he'd gone the whole day without eating. He literally full on, which is not like Freddie. He full on refused to eat the whole day. He just wasn't himself. He had a temperature, just wasn't 100%. We put him to bed. His stone was absolutely fine. Put him to bed, and I think it was about 10 o'clock. He literally vomited up, just liquid. And I was like, we're taking him to hospital now. I was like, just come until the morning. I was like, no, we are taking him to hospital now. And yeah, he had enterocolitis. But I think I actually put something on one of the Facebook pages that day saying, is this normal? What's other people's opinions? And so many people were like, keep an eye on him. If it gets worse, definitely take him to A&E. And it is so hurtful. So hurtful.
Definitely. I think social media gets a bad rap sometimes for stuff. And obviously there's tons of stuff on there that's horrific and awful and rubbish and whatever. But there's a lot of stuff on there. And I guess it depends. You know, it's social media is everything. It's the very best, the very worst, and everything in between. But there's some fantastic people on there who are so helpful. I know we talked a little bit about Georgina and how helpful she is, and she's done her website now, hirschsprungsdisease.co.uk, which is full of just, again, something that didn't exist a few years ago is now out there, and I think she's brilliant. And there are so many others who, you know, just when you need, you think, well, what's wrong? I don't know what's wrong, but I know something's wrong. And you go, right, well, I'll see, you know, if anybody else has got this. And more often than not, you aren't the only one who has experienced that before, or have to have a child that's experienced that before. But I'd definitely, to your point as well, go along with mum's instinct. Absolutely. The amount of people, I don't know about dad's instinct, Kieran. I don't know about that. I don't know.
Just leave him to the morning. He was fine. You know, I own.
The station that makes you feel good. station that makes you feel good.
But definitely a mum's instinct. I wholeheartedly support, because I just, and it's like you say, you know, I know something's wrong. I don't know what's wrong, but I know something's wrong. And 99% of the time, you're right. I think so. I think that's huge. But I guess, I know we sort of sidetracked a little bit from the story, but whereabouts did we get up to? Had surgery, and I think that was the point where we stopped. I think so. After the surgery, I know he's had three surgeries. Is that correct?
Yeah. So he had the one as a baby. He had one at 4 months, and he had the one in June of last year. So he's had three surgeries. He currently has the ileostomy, which we love. However, because the bit of bowel now between the ileostomy, so he's got a loop stoma. So the bit of bowel between the ileostomy and his bum is obviously healthy now. It's actually healthy bowel. So he actually passes from his bum as well. So it will sometimes overflow. And obviously his bowel produces mucus as well. So yeah, it overflows, and we sometimes get a pooey nappy as well, which is, yeah, fun, because we never had the stone that he had at 4 months. We never had poo then in the nappy from that 4 months until June of last year. Other than when he had enteroclitis, nothing came out of there. So, yeah, having poo back in a nappy is a bit of a, oh, wow, what do we do? Yeah. We actually have to clean his butt.
It's really strange. Like, I would kind of laugh at, like, Freddie's friends, dads, and friends of mine that have got kids and stuff. I would just kind of laugh and go, well, I don't have to do pooey nappies. I still don't think I've had to change more than 10 pooey nappies in my life, which is crazy when I've got a 3-year-old in a few months, and I've given it the big one. So, oh, I have to do pooey nappies. And now I'm emptying a bag and the pooey nappy at the same time. So all of a sudden, I think probably me being a bit, giving it the big one, has now actually turned around and bitten me on the backside there. So, but it's, yeah, he poos out his bum and out of his bag. And we have noticed he can fart from his bum and from his stoma at the same time. I'm really impressed with, but genuinely impressed with that.
He beats his bunny hook though. He likes to ask which one the noise came from. He thinks that's quite a fun game. So, yeah.
But these aren't games that were in ever any of the books or, you know, YouTube videos I read about or watched my parenting, and that they never mentioned that one. And so that's...
He's very soon didn't mention that.
Yeah. But it is funny. It is like, say, the stoma, we, really funny way, as that mum opposite in the hospital after a second surgery said, oh, you'll love it. We absolutely, absolutely love it.
And it gives him the life he has now. I mean, he, seeing as he does pass poo through now, it is really liquidy, and it does give him really, really bad nappy rash. So we tried out a new product from the hospital in January, because it was really, really bad, to the point where every time we were wiping his bum, he was just screaming. So they gave us this, I think it's called Cavalon. It's like a stick. Have you ever heard of it?
I have.
And they were like, you need to hold his bum cheeks apart for at least 90 seconds, because otherwise his bum will stick together. So we held it apart for way longer.
Like, spring it.
Before bed, put his nappy on, put him to bed, woke up the next morning, tried to pull his nappy off. Nappy wouldn't come off without really tugging it. We were like, ah, okay. And then we got the nappy off and his bum was completely stuck together. We were like, oh, okay, this is a new one. So yeah, we've tried all sorts, but yeah, his bum does still get really sore. So we love the stroma. We would ideally like to keep the stroma, just because he lives such a normal life with it. And because obviously he doesn't have much bowel, we know that he probably wouldn't be able to have much control over it. So yeah, we are for the stoma. We're in chats with our surgeon about, like, where we go from now. And we actually did have a second opinion from Older Hay as well, just to discuss everything, and they were really helpful as well. So yeah, at the moment, we're just going to keep riding the wave of the stoma and just see how he gets on. I think in our heads, in an ideal world, it would be nice for him to keep what he's got now until he's at an age where he can decide, actually, I want to make this stoma permanent, or no, I want to get rid of the stoma and try and give it a go. So I think that would be the ideal route, really, from now. But yeah.
Good. I think that's the other good thing. You have options.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I'm not sure of back in the day, but sort of now there are a lot of people who I talk to have children with either long segment or total colonic that say, actually, the stoma kind of works for us, you know, and stomas are not this sort of big scary thing that you've never seen before now. There are so many people, for not just Hirschsprungs, but for a multitude of different conditions, have stomas, and they're so prominent, and you know, people don't worry so much about, you know, the bags and this and that and the other, and they are a lot more visible now, you know. So having a stoma and thinking, oh, I'm going to be, you know, the only one in the world with a stoma, is not something anymore. So I think there are a lot of people, and again, it's very much each to their own, but there are, I have seen a lot of people with longer segment Hirschsprungs saying, actually, we're going to keep the stoma now. But it's, yeah, but I think that's an interesting one. Really, really interesting. I'll be fascinated to know sort of in a few years and well, months and years to see, you know, how Freddie gets on, I think.
Yeah,
it'll be.
I think we just want them to be able to live a normal life and be able to go to school. And I think with the stoma, he can. Like, yeah. Yeah, sorry. I chipped in over what you remember.
No, I was going to say something very similar. I think it's like we found, I mean, both of us actually didn't know about stomas until Adele Roberts. It's Adele Roberts, isn't it? The radio DJ. Like, she was in the marathons and stuff like that. So that's actually probably the first time we've really kind of been like, oh, what's that? And noticed it. And then not so long later, we're having a child and then we'll end up with a stoma. And it's kind of, it was nice having, oh, we know there are people that have got these. Obviously, I believe hers was for bowel cancer. I might be wrong.
I think you're right.
That, like, obviously different reasons, and everyone, you know, when you look online, but people got different reasons for it. So some people have, like, you know, Crohn's and some other bits and bobs and stuff, and it's interesting hearing how those guys have got stomas and why they've got, and it's kind of like a real, I don't know, it's a really cool, like, community of people with stomas, and it's just like a really strange way for everyone to be, like, a big group of people be brought together, but it's a really nice way, if that makes sense. Like, no one expected this reason. Like, you know, if you're a football fan, you'd be with football people, that kind of stuff. But with stomas, everyone's together. And I've already done the research. There's a Great Britain stoma rugby team, so Fred would be absolutely fine.
Yes.
So I've already done the research for him. He'll be all right.
You've already got him trained.
Yeah, exactly. All puffed out for him.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's so much more prevalent than it was. You know, I think back to when I had not my first one, but my second one, you know, going back over 20 years now. You know, I didn't know anyone with a stoma. I didn't even mention it to anyone because I thought, well, nobody will know what on earth I'm talking about. But there's so many people now who've, and not just people who just have a stoma and live with a stoma, but achieve with a stoma as well. Like you said, with the rugby team, like Adele Roberts, you know, these people who do marathons, do Ironmans, do rugby, do, you know, everything and anything.
Yeah.
And I guess that kind of leads on to my last question, which I know you've spoken about medically for Freddie, what's sort of coming up potentially in the future, maybe not, but sort of non-medically. And I'll ask sort of both of you on this one. I guess apart from sort of just sort of living a normal, happy life, but what else would you like for Freddie in the future?
I think, like, so an issue we've had really, I think really recently, maybe this side of Christmas, this new year, and he got really scared, didn't he? So we've actually been really lucky with these bags that we've actually had no very few leaks or anything, issues like that. But it just happened one day, it was kind of peeling off. He's 2 years old. He wants to pull the bag off. So we kind of, it was coming off and we thought, oh, we're going to have a shower anyway. We'll shower you about the bag on. Normally we shower with the bag on because we've got it scarred. When he was about 18 months old, he decided to grab his stoma.
And the
shower tray looked a bit like a murder scene. And ever since that, we've been a bit like, yeah, we're not going to do that. Let's keep the bag on. And by doing that, we were like, oh, we'll keep it that way. So recently, obviously, the bag came off and we thought, oh, we'll just leave it off. He'll shower about it. And he really panicked. He saw it and just freaked out and was crying and just really got really scared. And we were a little bit like kind of taken aback by it. And we just assumed he'd be fine. But we thought about it. He hasn't really seen his stoma. And that sounds really silly, but
it's normally tucked inside the bag.
So if we're in the bag,
why would he see it?
Exactly. And when we do bag changes, we rely heavily on YouTube and Spider-Man or something like that to keep him occupied, just because he keeps him still. And so he doesn't often look down at it. He just kind of lays there, lets us do what we need to do, and then he's all right. And then he gets up and runs away. So he kind of stood in the mirror and freaked out. So what we've really tried is to get him used to his stoma. We've named it Red. He can't say many words, so we thought, learn some colours, why not? So we'll do Red. And one of your friends was really nice and made like a storyboard kind of thing about his stoma as well, which he really likes, doesn't it? It's got pictures of him and our dogs in it, and he really loves that, and that's really nice as well. And he's just seemed a lot more since we've really consciously done it. We've never like hidden away from it or been embarrassed by anything like that, but we've always just been there. We made more of an effort to like make him aware of it. And now, when he goes swimming, he shows everyone his stoma. He almost looks annoyed when other people don't have one. So stuff like that. So he's just not just being against non-stoma people. But I think like long-term, we just want him to be completely comfortable with what he's got. To answer your question, like that's, he was very nervous and very, it was actually really unsettling for us to see. He was so scared of it. And obviously it's his body. He shouldn't be scared of it because that bag is a part of him and it's an important part of his health as well, which is also important, or very important, obviously. So yeah, I think just for him to be really comfortable in his own body and just be like, I've got a stoma, but it doesn't really matter. I don't really care. It's there. And I'll move on. Obviously he's got medical things and we're overcoming them slowly, like with, he's dairy intolerant. So, not having dairy and he's got to learn not to put random toys and lick windows and stuff like that, put things in his mouth because then he gets ill. So it's that kind of stuff. We just want to be really happy with it. And
yeah,
to be honest, I think he is. I think he is much better now. He's really, if he's going to keep a stoma long term, obviously we've read a lot of stuff about people having mental health problems with it, because obviously it can be a real taboo for people, and that's completely understandable. But because obviously he's growing up knowing no different, I don't want him to. It would be easier for him than going from no stoma to stoma as an adult or a teenager. So we just want him to be happy with that, and to be, as Lara said, whatever normal is, we want him to try and maintain a normal life and not have any barriers. He doesn't have to use public toilets too often, which is a result.
I'm fan.
So yeah, I think that's what I'd say on that.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I just want him to be able to anything he wants to do. I want him to be able to do it. He and this is another reason we're so for his stoma. He absolutely loved swimming. He started swimming when he was probably about, what was he? I think he was about 8 weeks.
It was once his first scars had healed up.
Yeah,
he was allowed to. He was in the pool like immediately.
It's something we've done every week since then. And that's something that I look back at and I'm like, well, actually, if he doesn't have his stoma, will he feel confident enough to go swimming if he can't control his bowels? So it's little things like that. He loves swimming. I want him to be able to just do everything he wants to do and everything he enjoys doing. Which, with the stoma.
Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much, both of you, for joining me. It's been fascinating to hear Freddie's story and your thoughts on it and thoughts on stomas as well. This is fantastic, absolutely brilliant. And I wish I wish all three of you, four of you with the dog, you the very, very best for everything that comes in the future. Thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.